It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law. The right advice at the right time. And again, your calls are welcome. And Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins are with us. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Well, Ben, Wes and I get a lot of questions every week about trust.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, trust is a very general word. There are lots of different kinds of trust. And one always has to begin the conversation about what is the purpose of the trust?
Mm-hmm.
What is the objective? Does one really need a trust?
Mm-hmm.
And we are proponents of the theory that let's keep it simple, particularly in our legal lives. If for some reason one does not need a trust or does not need a particular that kind of element in their plan, then there's no reason to implement it. But there is a factual scenario that we hear of often where there is really no choice but to create a trust for a family. And this is the circumstance of a handicapped child, our handicapped even young adult or even middle-aged adult, depending on the age of the parents.
Mm-hmm.
This child, due to an accident, injury, birth defect, a handicap, a disability, this particular child, and when I say child, I don't mean necessarily a minor.
Right.
I mean, this
right.
can be a 45-year-old man.
Mm-hmm.
I had this file just late last week where it was, in fact, a middle-aged fella who is, of course, disabled. And as a disabled person, many times you have a benefit from the state, from the government.
Mm-hmm.
You are, in fact, on, you know, Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
After 2 years of disability with Social Security Administration, maybe you are receiving Medicaid benefits. For whatever reason, you are getting government benefits. And if you inherit from your parent, then the benefits that you're receiving are going to be discontinued. They're going to be affected
mm-hmm.
by that. So parents that are in this situation create what's known as a supplemental needs trust.
Right.
Or we call it an SNT, a supplemental needs trust.
Mm-hmm.
This, of course, allows the child to continue to receive their benefits, whatever they happen to be, but the inheritance that they receive from their parent is set aside, separately maintained.
Right.
And used for the over and beyond supplemental things of life. Now, this is the generic introduction, general introduction, if you will, Ben, to this topic today.
Mm-hmm. And the supplemental needs trust, as you said, comes into play with minors as well as adults, and can be very helpful in helping to. It's like insurance. It helps to keep an assurance that someone's going to be cared for.
Right. You know, Ben, there's really no reason to not leave the inheritance due to a child, a mm-hmm. loved one, just because they have some type of health issue.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks out there think that, you know that I can't leave anything to my daughter who has this issue because her SSI will stop.
Hmm.
So I'm going to either leave her out completely so she keeps her SSI, or I'm going to leave what would normally go to her, her third, her half, whatever mm-hmm. it ends up being, to maybe another child to be held for her.
Mm-hmm.
But that is, in my opinion, not good planning.
Yeah,
I mean, the good news here in this conversation is the law allows us to set up this supplemental needs trust or special needs trust. Synonymous terms, by the way,
mm-hmm.
SNT, Special Needs or Supplemental Needs Trust, for this person. And then, you know, the parent may leave the asset to the benefit of this daughter,
mm-hmm.
this person, but in the trust. So the benefits are not disrupted.
So SSI still is maintained.
SSI is intact. SSI cannot use this inheritance against the eligibility for those benefits mm-hmm. because the planning was done ahead of time. The assets never came into the control of the child.
Right.
They came into the control immediately upon the death of the trustee for the benefit of the child, with special language in the trust that would preclude those assets from being counted for purposes of eligibility of really any need-based mm-hmm. or any means-based government benefit. So it's a very powerful tool. And, you know, where Cecil and I see this on the back end is more times than not a failure to plan with regard to that and then the problems that ensue as a result. This is relatively inexpensive planning, but it's one of the most powerful tools we have in our toolbox dealing with folks who have, you know, a loved one who has a disability of some sort. So, but it doesn't help us at all unless you plan ahead and use it
right.
while you're living as part of your estate plan to leave the assets, you know, for the benefit of that child or loved one.
Hmm. So Ben, the way this would frame up in our documents would be, let's say that we have a mother and father and they have a 40-year-old son or daughter that are handicapped due to natural causes, disease process, or possibly through an accident.
Mm-hmm.
the one that I had late last week was, as I said, a 45-year-old man who unfortunately had a construction job accident
mm-hmm.
and was paralyzed, had fallen off a roof, and as a result was, of course, highly quadriplegic, actually.
Mm-hmm.
He had some function, but greatly limited. This mother came in, and she has two other children. So she, of course, wants to leave her estate a third, a third, and a third. So a third would go to her other, a third each to her other two children. And then the last third mm-hmm. to a trust for the benefit of David, John,
right.
Mark.
Right.
Okay. Then, of course, there is a freestanding, if you will, trust, if you will, kind of on the side. In other words, it's not part of the will.
Mm-hmm.
She pours over that third into the supplemental needs trust, which is a separate and distinct standalone trust.
Right.
Standing by, waiting to receive that third.
And it's received on her death. Right.
It is funded in full at the time of her death. Now, the standalone aspect of this trust is that any trust, as we've discussed, Ben, is really a contract between the creator of the trust, who would be this woman, this mm-hmm. mother, and her trustee, which is most likely one of the other healthy children, one of the siblings of the gentleman who had the accident, and the beneficiary of the trust, of course, being her adult son. So those are the three parties to the trust, the creator or grantor, the beneficiary, and mm-hmm. the trustee.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's an agreement that the grantor says that I've created this trust, that when it has money, I ask my trustee to provide benefit to the beneficiary. This does not mean that this goes off necessarily to a bank or an investment firm,
mm-hmm.
Off to an accountant, even off to a lawyer. This is all within the family. This can be very simply maintained.
Mm-hmm.
This trust can be set up in a very straightforward and efficient manner. And again, is a private matter within
right.
this family.
Okay, so the family, the trustee, then is retaining the funds and just in, maybe in a regular account or just in their
correct.
Trust account.
Yeah,
sure.
And a trust account.
Yeah.
But, you know, a trust account with the bank account maybe, just like we all have,
mm-hmm.
a savings account. Maybe there are enough funds within the trust for there also to be an investment account,
mm-hmm.
you know, with one of the good investment firms. Maybe not. Maybe there's only, you know, a sufficient amount of money that there just needs to be a cash account.
Right.
You know, a checking account and a money market account.
Okay.
Right. It would depend on the amount of money in the trust.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the questions that we get, that Wes and I get, is that – Well, and as Wes was mentioning, we get these files where they come in after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that, you know, my child inherited this from his grandfather or grandmother, or, you know, or even a brother or sister come in about their handicapped brother and sister and say, my parents left my brother or sister this, their inheritance. The thing that our listeners need to understand, Ben, is that you are not able to disclaim. There is a legal concept mm-hmm. known as a disclaimer. It means to release mm-hmm. or to renounce or to reject your inheritance. And this is a very useful tool that we do use in planning many times. But as to the penalty of inheritance for a handicapped person, it will apply, the penalty will, whether or not you disclaim or not.
Mm-hmm. Be okay. deemed a gift of the assets.
It will.
Right. It's as though you actually you received the asset
yeah.
and gave it away,
yeah,
as opposed to just skipping you altogether.
Right. It's not involving the estate any longer. Right.
It's ineffective. Because it's,
right. Yeah. right. Yeah.
And so many people come in after the fact and they say, well, my son or daughter they're not going to accept these assets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know that they can't accept these assets because if they do, they're going to lose their government benefits.
Right.
And unfortunately, we have to tell them that, that a non-acceptance, a renunciation is not going to avoid
right.
The consequences.
So this is must be done.
That's right.
Time.
I mean, there's some planning techniques that can be used that are very complicated in order to deal with assets received. We
mm-hmm.
kind of get into then our asset protection conversation,
sure.
that kind of thing. But my goodness, we can avoid every bit of that if the planning with regard to the special needs trust or supplemental needs trust is done before the grantor passes away.
All right. We'll have more to come in a moment here on that subject. And if you would like to call in, 800-818-2255 or the local numbers.
247-7282 or 353-4674.
And more on Let's Talk Legal in just a moment. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal here on Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law, answering your questions about your legal life. And we're talking about supplemental needs trusts or SNTs today.
Right. So, you know, Ben, what we're really trying to accomplish here for, mm-hmm. you know, this family member, this loved one who has a disability or has a special need of some sort is really to enhance their life, to make it as good as it can possibly be. We know that they're going to have challenges because of the mm-hmm. issues they have in their life. But just because the way our legal system is set up doesn't mean that they have to be destitute in order to continue to receive their benefits.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that we have to leave the inheritance to this person and then lose the inheritance
mm-hmm.
to pay for their cost of care. This special needs trust, this tool, this trust allows us to give quality of life, to give the assets for the benefit of this person as they need them, but
mm-hmm.
to maintain what our state and federal government allows with regard to care and help for folks who find themselves in this type of situation.
So someone who is receiving the benefit of a special needs trust is not a countable asset against them.
Correct.
For Medicaid?
In the event that they have, you know, a significant medical need, but maybe not Medicaid yet, or mm-hmm. maybe not long-term care mm-hmm. yet, and things progress to the point that at some point in time they do need long-term care, then all the assets in the supplemental needs trust are not countable. Medicaid cannot count them for the $2,000, you know, total countable assets to determine if the person's eligible or not.
Mm-hmm.
So again, a very powerful tool. Also, as far as the trust and the way it actually works, you know, Cecil talked about the different trust accounts and the way that we have a trustee accountable for those trust accounts. Normally, we're not in a situation under a special needs trust, supplemental needs trust, where we're dispersing money to the beneficiary.
Mm-hmm.
There's not like a, you know, I'm going to just give you $1,000 when you need it. That's not the way it works.
Right.
What the special needs trust does is it pays for anything that the person needs. It could be rent. Mm-hmm. It could be food. It could be clothing. It could be transportation. It could buy a house. Hmm. Special needs trust could buy a house.
Right.
Could buy an apartment. Could buy a condominium. Can hold title.
I would imagine often does. Yes.
Often does in the event there are enough assets.
Right.
In the respective trust. So it's very important that obviously we pick the right person to serve as this trustee as well. Mm-hmm. We want someone who is obviously going to be trustworthy, who is right. going to understand the needs of this beneficiary. Sometimes we're appointing co-trustees. So we have some checks and balances there. One can watch over the other a little bit.
Okay.
But that's a very important issue. Now, in many cases at Harvell and Collins, you know, when we have problems after the fact because the special needs didn't get set up or there was a lack of planning, a lot of these type issues where there's maybe a misuse mm-hmm. of the funds that were left to someone who maybe has a disability, those kind of cases, unfortunately, arise, and
right.
they do end up on my desk a lot of times because I do the litigation. And as we've talked
about, somebody challenging the trustee.
Well, it could be a breach of fiduciary duty. Yeah, right. It could be, you know, a lot of things. So I can tell you that in most cases, it's more likely that there's going to be a breach of fiduciary duty if there's a significant asset left to someone who has some disabilities, if it's left outright.
Mm-hmm.
Because folks in that station of life, it just seems to me they're more susceptible to undue influence than from others.
Certainly.
They maybe have not had as many life experiences as other people. They're not able to stand up for themselves. They're more impressionable. So they find themselves, you know, sometimes in a situation where folks have some ulterior motive and want to get to their money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the event that the proper planning is done, and a supplemental needs trust is set up, special needs trust is set up, and we're dealing with, you know, a trustee or maybe co-trustees.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience dealing with this, the likelihood that there would be a breach, meaning misuse of those funds, is much lower as compared to those assets being in the person's name and then that person, you know, being subject to others' so-called friends influencing them.
All right. Again, talking about supplemental needs trust and other subjects too, and we'll come back here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. If you'd like to reach them, you can find them online at harvellandcollins.com, and they're at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City. And we'll have more to come in a moment. All right, hold on.
Oh. Okay.
You can jump the gun here a little bit.
Sure.
We have a Facebook question that has been asking a question that is a little bit convoluted in terms of reading it. I'm not sure where the subjects and predicates are. So, but at the same, the crux of it though was talking about some changes that have happened. Some people have passed away, they've been designated in a will.
Right.
So can changes be made, basically, can they be initialed and notarized on a will?
Right. Well, that would not be our first choice, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
A document really does need to be absolutely clear. We don't want there to be any ambiguity. It's best, the answer to the question to the gentleman and lady who asked you the question on your Facebook page, Ben, is that basically we would recommend that there be a new, concise, and clear document.
Mm-hmm.
Not an initial that is then notarized, something of that nature. That just could lead to ambiguity and to challenge. And this is, of course, the last thing in the world we want because, mm-hmm. you know, that is very expensive.
Right.
I mean, you know, when there's a challenge, when there's a question, when there's an ambiguity, I mean, we're talking thousands and thousands of dollars potentially to clear that kind of confusion. You know, to have the document redone clearly
mm-hmm.
is not going to be that expensive. And so that would be our recommendation.
So if a beneficiary on this will would potentially benefit from this ambiguity that's been created, mm-hmm. being interpreted in their way.
Right.
Maybe contrary to what the true intent was, but maybe a reasonable position.
Mm-hmm.
And then this person, this beneficiary, hires a lawyer. Off we go in court for the court to then make a declaration as to what was intended by the testator.
To read the mind of the testator.
$10,000 right. later, the court decides.
Mm-hmm.
Spend $150-ish dollars to do a new document.
Right.
And be done with it and make it clean and make it clear so we don't get into that kind of headache. That's what Cecil's talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And as you said, you know, we were talking about trust. You know, so often you guys are called to put out the fire afterwards.
That's true.
And instead, again, if planning is done ahead of time,
right,
a lot of these headaches can be avoided.
That's exactly right. There's no question about it. And there's just no substitute for sitting down with you know, a good attorney, you know, whether it be us or anybody. I mean, if you have a relationship with an attorney, you know, sit down with them, talk about your issues with them, let them absorb that, let them take notes, let them understand the issues,
right.
Do yourself a favor and go about taking care of your planning in that way as opposed to doing it quick and cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we hear about the legal zooms of the world, that kind of thing. And, you know, you think about that some canned documents such as canned wills and canned trust and canned so-and-so. Well, those have been around for decades.
Yeah, that's right.
You can go to Staples 15 years ago.
Oh, go to library.
The only difference now is that they've now been packaged in a package that kind of makes it look like you're getting legal services too.
Right.
But you're not.
Yeah.
All you're getting is a document.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be very careful with that. I am a strong proponent of sitting down with someone that you're going to have a relationship with, an attorney, and in the event that there's an issue that comes up, you can call that lawyer, and that lawyer can give you legal advice and help you with these issues so we don't end up in court dealing with something because you thought you did it one way, but it ended up another way, and here we are fighting over that.
Exactly. So. All right, and again, in that supplemental needs trust, these are things that need to be handled carefully because you're talking about your loved one being cared for,
right?
And you're setting up the means to do that,
right?
Just a quick question: does that imply a guardianship when you have a trust?
It does not. I mean, you do not have to set up a special needs trust for someone who is incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could be that they are incompetent,
but
they don't have to be incompetent.
Who's physically impaired?
So. Yeah, they can just have an impairment of some sort or have some issue that you believe may progress to the point where they, you know. Mm-hmm. We'll have a more serious issue. I mean, it could be an early onset Alzheimer's.
The use of the trust may well avoid the necessity for a guardianship.
That's right.
Because the assets are now under the control of the trustee. And so they may not need to go to the expense and the emotional expense as well of a guardianship.
If you want to find out more, call on the folks at Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law, 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City.